Dr. Janet Culley, you're on Whitby Island, huh? That's pretty nice. Your practice is in Seattle, however.
So we kind of straddle two worlds.
Well, I can understand that from, I guess, the quiet, beautiful seascapes to busy hustle bustle of Seattle, huh?
That's about right, and then into the stars as well. So.
I understand. I want to talk to you about this book, Sacred Encounters: Spiritual Awakening During Close Encounters. You've actually investigated this for what, 13 or 14 years, haven't you?
Oh yeah. By this time, I mean that was that I put that out with the promo material. So by this time, I think it's going on 15. Yeah, I've been doing this for a while.
And what thing stands out more than anything else about this practice and this investigation and this research? I mean, is there something that really grabs you?
Yeah. Well, I'm amazed that more people don't really get what's going on in this phenomenon, even people within this field. And I think basically that we as a species are being shifted to a new level of consciousness, and that's very noticeable when you work with experiencers that have had close encounters.
Well, you know, Dr. Coley, the first thing I have to ask you is exactly what is going on?
Well, you know what? I think that these beings are involved in a long-term modification of the human genome. So in other words, we're having multi-generational alteration of human DNA, you know? So, I mean, I don't look in a microscope to say that, but what I do is I look at the human personality changes that take place. And I think that they're facilitating these changes in individuals, and that will carry through to the entire species. And that's what one of the experiencers in my book, Haley, was told. She was told that there was a species shift underway, and they were going to shift her first. And by altering her, altering her and others, the shift is going to move like a wave through our species.
And what is the object here? Well, I mean, why do they want to change things? Are they making us more friendly and more spiritual, or is it the opposite?
No, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, they're making a they are enlivening us, ennobling us, and turning us on to love, in essence. I mean, when you enter higher states of consciousness, that's the essence of them. You're more connected with unity. You're more connected with love. And so the people, the individuals that are changed, are functioning on a higher level. And you just have to look around us on this planet to see what's going wrong. I mean, there's war all over the place and environmental degradation. And when you take individuals and this happens also with near-death experiences too. So any extraordinary experience, but close encounters, this happens even more radically, I think. But the human being is capable of functioning on a higher level, and they're just enhancing some of our potential. Okay, but they're facilitating it. It's kind of like in psychology, we do what we call interventions.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And they're doing it on a physiological level.
You know, the one thing that always, and I had these discussions, not necessarily specifically the way you state them of your research and your background, but something general. And the first thing I always wonder about, well, why do they pick these people at random? Why don't they pick the movers and shakers of the world?
Well, you know what? I mean, I don't think it's random. I do believe that it runs in families, that there are lineages, there are whole generations of people that have been affected. And that's what I see in my clients, is that their parents have been affected, and it goes back on down the line, and I don't know how far back. But we also have the spiritual connections in the spiritual lineages, like the Tibetan Buddhists. Certainly their lineage has definitely been in contact with these beings. So I don't think it looks on the surface to be random, but when you get down in there, you'll find whole families being involved.
Well, I think what I'm saying here, I agree with you. Families seem to be a family history of it. We've done, almost four decades of these shows now, and it seems to me that that's one of the things that once a family is touched, it seems to be passed from generation to generation. They seem to have encounters. But why not the Kennedy family, or why not the Bush family, or why not?
Who's to say the Kennedy family hasn't been? I mean, I think that there are individuals that are out there in the public arena that possibly we don't know the extent of their involvement. But also, you have to remember, this is a grassroots effort, so that the people, it tends to work this way in consciousness at least, that the people that are doing the real work are sometimes beneath the radar, you see. And so, like the clients I have, you might not, I mean, they look like everybody else, but the work they're doing on the level of consciousness on the planet is a very high level. And so they affect everybody on the planet. I mean, we all do. So just because you're not notorious or on the 6 o'clock news doesn't mean that you're not affecting everyone, see? And because it's a grassroots effort, I think that there's so much fear that it almost serves the purpose that it be a sort of like an underground movement, and that the people don't need to be on the 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, good point. One thing that I was learning about Dr. Coley is, when I got into the UFOlogy and doing UFO programs, I was really kind of a nuts and bolts guy. I just wanted to, knock on the door and have an alien come to the door of the flying saucer and say hi and let me interview him. Obviously, that's not happening and hasn't happened. And then you get into, you mentioned spirituality, you get into Christian religion, Buddhist religion, whatever religion, there seems to be some sort of angels in all of them. And it seems that the more I talk to people, it seems that there seems to be some sort of connection between angels and aliens. They might be the same thing.
I think there are a whole, there are levels of beings that we right now on this planet don't consciously, we don't consciously acknowledge. But definitely there are different kinds of beings, and that we are going to be, I think, in our lifetime, Jerry, I think we're going to be entering a kind of intergalactic community. I mean, that might sound corny, but I do think that we're going to be coming out of denial on this planet within our lifetimes. And so there are all kinds of beings out there, and here we're so ignorant as to think that we're the only kind, in the universe. Well, that's ridiculous. And some of these beings, I do think that they're not altogether material. They don't materialize all the time here. And so that's the other thing is, if you have the ability to go out of body and do astral travel, well, you're probably more likely to encounter beings of this nature than you are driving down a country road. So there's different ways of contact. There are different levels of material. Material dimensionality, and there are beings all around us, I think, all the time. We just don't, right now, we're just not attuned, or at least most of us aren't. There are some of us that are, though.
When you first started into this area with your research, and I guess you had a patient or someone that came to you and had these experiences, were you open to this already, or?
Yeah, I was. I actually, my partner and I, Dr. Thomas Beck, we sought this field out. We wanted to study it. We wanted to do doctoral work in it. So we had already read, say, in 1979, we had read the case of Betty Ann Terrasen, and we recognized its authenticity as a spiritual experience. And so we wanted to work with these clients. It was a while before we could, of course, but then I had to undergo my own evolution on a personal level. I had to deal with cancer first, And that was actually my route or my avenue to interspecies communication, because I started to work with dolphins and whales. So I kind of, I had to get grounded in my body, and this is a very physical, this is a very physically real event that, you know, that takes place when you do interspecies communication. And, you know, I mean, whether it's with a dog or a cat or a whale, you know, or an alien, see, you're talking about levels of consciousness.
Well, I understand that. By the way, how is your health?
I'm cured. I'm cured. But that was my introduction. And so, you know, I went from having cancer, being with dolphins and whales, and then when I did my doctoral work, I started to be able to work with people that had these encounters. So it was kind of an evolution. I was interested in it intellectually, but see, there's a big difference between being an armchair philosopher, if you will, and actually sitting down with somebody and being helpful. And so, you know, I had to learn a lot myself. And
Do you deal with hypnosis?
Well, my partner does hypnosis.
Uh-huh.
He does hypnotherapy. And I do offer EMDR, which is an eye movement therapy that helps with trauma. And then there's a lot of integration work that takes place with people. So it's sort of a process where you're trying to integrate these really, really altered state, non-ordinary experiences into their everyday life. And that's why they don't show up at the front door or on the White House lawn, is people can't handle the shock of it yet on the planet, see. So you have to go through a process of acclimation or integration.
So how are we doing with that process?
Well, you know, I think that enough people have been touched that it acts. It's kind of like in materials engineering, there's a concept that's called doping. And you take a very small substance, you add a tiny bit of a substance to a material, and it's 1% of 1%, and that will radically alter the property of the material. So not everybody needs to have these encounters. Not everybody needs to be processing them instantly for this to take hold on the planet. So I think enough people like Haley and Joy, who I chronicle in my book, enough people, enough individuals are having it so that it's going to, I think, change consensus reality, essentially. And it only takes a very small amount of people to do this. That's the way consciousness moves.
When you decided to write this book, why did you call it Sacred Encounters? I like the title.
Oh, thank you. It's Spiritual Awakenings During Close Encounters, the subtitle. Well, I wanted to speak to the spiritual aspect of this contact phenomenon. I didn't want to come from a place of, you know, abduction. You know, that's a different paradigm. That's a beginning paradigm. That's a beginner's paradigm. And you might have to go through that in order to deal with the trauma and the shock. But I want to take people a number of steps further. You know, I want to get them acquainted with what the sacred lineage is, how they connect with this phenomenon, and you know, Tibetan Buddhism. And the Sufi orders. And more of that is going to be coming out on this planet. And it just hasn't been time yet. So I wanted to take people beyond the abduction paradigm, you know, and look at it as a spiritual phenomenon, which in essence it is.
Have you ever had a personal experience yourself?
No, I've had some. I mean, not as. I don't qualify myself as, like I said, an abductee, or even to the extent of the people that I work with. They've had many more contacts than I think I have right now. But then, see, it doesn't suit my role to be that conscious. I mean, my partner and I, we've seen a UFO. you know, and I have seen a being, and I...
What's the being like?
A small, grayish.
Okay, then it fit the stereotype.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I talk a little bit about that in the introduction of my book. I've had, you know, I didn't start out with memory, but as the more you hang out with people that have encounters, the more you start to, the more you're introduced yourself. And I just think it's my role right now to be, you know, a facilitator, sort of like Giles. Did you ever watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm more like Giles right now. I'm than Buffy. So, you know, I work with people and I certainly believe in it, but it's not that important for me right now to be working on my own experience. So,
how about support for what your work and what you and your partner are doing, not only there in Seattle, but around the country? Is this becoming more accepted in your field, or is it about the same?
I think that there is a chance. Okay, there's a field within psychology known as transpersonal psychology. So with straight clinical psychology, no, you don't get too much interest or acknowledgement. But in transpersonal psychology, that works with ordinary, non-ordinary, and altered state experiences. And so there's more of an opening within that field. And then the other thing that's new is the field of near-death studies. And so that has become an academic field.
Have you delved into that?
Yeah, I have done some research.
I've been around a couple of people that have had those experiences. One was my stand-up comedy partner in the 80s, and another one was, I've lost contact with him, the other one. But it does have a life-changing experience, even though they tell the same story. Betty Eady's from up in your part of the country.
Yes, I've heard her speak. She's a wonderful, wonderful... she's just great. Yeah. And so that experience should be, that information, that knowledge, ufology has to link up with these other fields, you see, and it would help tremendously because it isn't just, one phenomenon that you can isolate. You can learn so much from these other experiences, and we need to. And so that, if anything, is where the opening is to link up with fields that are already more established than ufology in terms of psychology.
Well, when the near-death experience or the after-death experience or whatever you want to refer to it as, encounters, I have some things that are fairly similar.
The effect that it has on people, there's a lot of commonality. There's been a wonderful research study done by Kenneth Ring, who was a near-death researcher, and then I took it one step further, and he looked at people that had had either near-death or UFO, and I looked at people that had had both experiences, and we gave them a questionnaire, and we did just some statistical research, and then qualitative, so their story, and the results are absolutely astonishing. I mean, you get to detail the changes that people feel that they've undergone.
I think if I could draw up on one thing after doing 40 years of these type of shows, is that UFOs, just seeing one, is a life-changing experience for most.
Yes. So you can imagine, the more intense or the more personal the contact is, the more life-changing it is.
Well, what do you think's on the other side of that tunnel in near-death experience, or do you think that's the human mind?
Well, I think it's more than if you talk about whether you talk about God or creation. Yeah, I mean that's what we're ultimately looking at is unity consciousness. How much can we merge, on a higher level with all of creation? So, you know, I mentioned Betty Ann Dreyas, and oh, she had some incredible mystical experiences in the context of the close encounters, and that was really what got us going in the first place, my partner and me. Could tell this is a mystical experience.
Yeah, I did a show recently with Raymond Fowler, who's done some work with her.
Yeah, uh-huh. And he himself, and after years of not remembering, Raymond Fowler started to explore his own connection.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, generally, I mean, you don't get to be Giles with Buffy, you know, it's for no reason. I mean,
I understand.
Yeah, I mean, business for 40 years. I mean,
the thing that I really kind of want to talk to you about, and I want to get to some experiences here in a minute, because you've got some wonderful things in your book that, you know, we in radio, we always want to look out for something to reach out and grab a listener, and you have lots of things like that. Before I even get into that, though, the psychology of being an experiencer, I one thing I notice when I try to get these people on the air is that they really are torn between maybe I should do it, maybe I shouldn't do it, and they run across a lot of people who basically call them, oh, you're just nuts, or you're emotionally disturbed, and it really seems to eat at them more than it does me, or maybe it's just I've been in this business too long and I just don't pay any attention when people call me nuts, but it seems to have a big effect on people. In other words, they are really conflicted about whether or not to go public.
And if you think about it, this is one of the fields where if you have the experience, you can be diagnosed with a mental illness, see? And that used to happen with people when they had near-death experiences. But now, because it's academically, you know, the credentialed people look at it and they do research and publish research, you're more apt able to come forward with an experience like that. But in ufology, there still is such widespread denial and skepticism that people can, lose friends. I mean, marriages have broken up. And
talked about Dr. Fowler. He's had to promise his daughter and that he wouldn't write a whole lot about this because she doesn't want the grandkids around.
Oh, that, yeah, well... Well, I mean, it's a very powerful fear that is still active in this culture.
And I'm not telling anything out of court. He said that on the air. So.
Yeah, that's a shame. But you know, I understand their fears. I mean, when we did we helped out a Japanese show that Dr. Matt had recommended us for, and they came out here to Seattle to film, and we had to have a whole group session where people process their fears, you know, about being on the show. People wanted to wear disguises. It was that bad. But that's another thing. You have to process the fear, and you have to take it seriously.
Now, it does appear to me that people are more willing to talk about these things now than they were, say, in the 50s. I was very young, naturally, but I was in this business at the end of that decade. But in the early 50s, as junior high school, when all the UFOs were spotted, 1952, probably the busiest year of ever being reported. And it seems to me back then, maybe it's just because I was a kid, but everybody seemed to be very open about discussing it. 60s got a little quieter. By the 70s, people didn't like to talk about it.
Well, I think there have been documented that there's been disinformation and active...
Sure, and making fun is the best way to debunk something.
Ridicule works very well. I mean, as part of psychology, too, is you have to learn how to manipulate people, unfortunately, and people at large in this culture have been manipulated. So the fear has been, the fear has been bred, and you just have to be discerning, though.
Yeah, you mentioned Dr. Mack. Here's a man that we watched his transformation over the years, and... he had this unfortunate accident, he was obviously tapped into the greater good at the end, And so you ask the question, why? Why would it happen to him? I'm getting at is, are there other forces out here besides these people wanting the common good? I mean, I guess there is good and evil, naturally, but...
You just have to look at any sector of life on this planet. You're going to find both the positive and the negative. So, of course, there's that. But, you know, we mentioned the fear of the experiencers in going public. Well, the one thing that gets them over that fear is to think of the good they're going to be doing. And that it's, in a way, like Haley considers it her role. In fact, oh, here's something interesting. She was basically told that the beings would bring people to her to work with, that she had to go through this first herself. And then work through the trauma and the fear, and that they would bring her people to work with to help. So it was part of her role, you see. And it's not so much to do this in public, but her job is going to be to help others attain consciousness.
I must tell you, we've probably in the last year and a half talked to 12, 14 experiencers on the air. I mean, not just blind phone calls. I'm talking about people who we vetted privately and talked to and investigated somewhat. And all of them that came forward to a person really were kind of on a mission from God, so to speak. I'm using the term mission from God when you know what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about they're on a mission. They need to... They think it's their duty to let people know.
Yeah, there is that. You get to a place where you're in a role. Your role is teaching. See, your role is teaching, and your role is to help others with the experience. And that's basically what they said. That's basically what Haley came to, and that's what enabled her to go be interviewed on the Japanese program.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about her. What's happening with her now?
Well, you know, what tends to happen, what I notice is that when people work really intently on developing the contact, okay, and then it seems that they have to integrate this on a very personal level. And so right now, like, she's out there in the culture doing the things that normal people do, like having relationship, working at a job, and, dating, these kinds of things.
Sure.
So it's sort of like you do a real intense round of developing your ability to be conscious with the beings or communicating with the beings. And then you have to integrate it, like, you know, you go back to your family or you go back to your job. And so she's right now just basically in the culture, you know, working on personal development and things like that, making money.
Yeah, and now this television show you alluded to, you kind of glossed over that, but it's quite an honor, really. They could have picked anybody in the world to be a consultant, and Fuji Television's a pretty well-known network, and so it was a big deal.
Yeah, it was. It was really a big deal over there because they don't have, apparently there's an even bigger taboo on this subject over there. Because they're afraid of cults in particular, so when they went to John Mack or he teamed up with them and then they developed this program. It was an honor to have them come out here and to do a whole segment with Haley, and they reenacted her story. They used an actress, and then they also had the interview with her. So you could sort of go through an encounter with her, and then at the end of the segment, they would bring a Japanese panel on, different famous Japanese people that would vote whether they believed it or not. You know, how plausible did they find each segment? And it was interesting, by the end of the show, almost everybody was voting positively, like, yeah, we believe this. And what they found very convincing was actually the implant that Dr. Roger Lear, they had an implant and they had an analysis, and the analysis was so convincing. And I think, the Japanese tend to be very scientifically oriented too.
Have you had experience with people with implants? I tell you why I ask. I was visiting Roger Lear here a while back, and a couple other people who do things with implants as well. And a lady in Florida, about 30, she's 30, 31, claims she has one in her leg. What I'm saying is, once people find these things and they can't explain it on their body, it has a huge psychological ramification.
Yeah, but you know, I tend not to want to focus on. I mean, if somebody wants to really wants to have one out, I mean, well, I haven't worked with anybody that has. So, I mean, I tend to figure, well, enough alone.
Yeah, I understand. But what I'm getting at is this seems to be, and you mentioned Dr. Lear, this seems to be, you know, more common than we at first expected.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess that's a way to keep track of the families. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it has a number of purposes, I think. I mean, there are physiological changes that can be affected through these things.
Well, I think in fact, this woman in Florida, she went to emergency room one night, and she told the doctor about it, and he listened patiently, and he didn't make fun of her. All he said is, I think you need to leave well enough alone.
Yes, exactly. I mean, you run a great risk if you go to the mainstream medical in the first place. And then I did have somebody who had an experience where they feel that their x-rays were somehow spirited away, that you know, once they found something in him, then he was, you know, a target. So that's what makes me nervous about it. You know, I just kind of think if it ain't broken.
Now, you're a clinical psychologist. How do you square these things? All these people have phobias because they're, you know, it has an effect on them. So, I mean, how do you know if they're real or not?
Yeah, well, you've got to pretty much know the lay of the land when you're dealing with people, because sure, I've had people that you know, they either want to be included or they're not.
Well, there's probably a thousand reasons why they might want one. Some of them make sense, some don't.
You really want to have a good idea of how stable the personality is and how they're going to deal with it, because that's the thing. You don't want to just do hypnosis and try to recover memories when the person themselves can't handle it in their life and can't integrate it into their life. So you really have to have a sense of mental health functioning, I think, in order to deal with any population that's had an extraordinary experience, much less one that can be traumatic. See? So, you know, you don't want to mess around unless somebody is fairly stable to begin with, and unless they've got the commitment to do some work that's you know, to open up Pandora's box is essentially it. 'Cause, you know, there can be experiences that they may not consciously remember, but once you get triggered, like Haley had some things triggered, and you know, when you're dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, you don't want to mess around. So, but anyway, the one thing they found, they did a study at Harvard. They were, you know, they tended to try to debunk it in the final analysis. Unfortunately, it was hard. It's hard to do because the people had post-traumatic stress disorder, and you really don't get that through watching TV, you see,
yes,
or imagining it. But what they ended up, what was very significant, is that the people, by and large, almost all of the people in the study said yes, although it was terrifying, they would go through it again if they were given the chance. And that's very different than what you get with just basic trauma, you know. So that once again speaks to there's really something going on here, and we better wake up and take it seriously. And the implications for it are really quite vast.
So are you bullish or not on this world consciousness being awakened? In other words, do you think it's going to succeed ultimately, or is this mission impossible even for extraterrestrials or whatever they are?
Oh no, it's a happening thing. I think it looks especially dark before the dawn. I mean, we're really in a sort of dark ages right now on this planet, but tendrils of growth are there. The growth is there. So it's just underground.
In other words, Dr. Kola, you feel that this, by and large, is a positive experience, and that these beings, or whatever they are probably good rather than evil.
By and large, I would say, yeah, because you're looking at beings that are not caught in our space-time dimension. Their time with them is non-local, you see, and so any being that gets to that point is, you know, and I won't say that they're all on one level. I mean, sure, there are going to be some that might not have the best of intentions.
So, in other words, you're saying there's more than one group.
Oh, sure. I mean, I mean, you just look around on this planet. There's more than one type of animal. So why wouldn't there be more than one kind of being? But when you get on those levels that you're doing non-local, that instantaneous travel, you know, that by and large you're going to have a consciousness that's beyond subject-object consciousness, which is where we are for the most part on this planet. You know, we look at things as objects and we feel very separate. We don't feel the unity, and hence we abuse each other. So, you know, we create war, and so I think that by and large you're looking at beings that function very differently. And, you know, I know I brought up dolphins and whales before. Well, I think these beings as well on this planet are beyond subject-object consciousness. It's just we're so primitive we can't relate to them very easily unless we're in all state.
Well, are they in other dimensions? Or are they coming from somewhere else? Or, as Jim Morris, my friend, says when I talk to him about conspiracies, he says all of the suspects.
You know, I just had this wonderful conversation with somebody who's very adept with out-of-body work and astral travel, and he has seen many, many, many ships in this other dimension, say, and he's got very close contact with these beings, and they've helped him tremendously. Now, perhaps the direction he's going to go is to have contact while he's in the physical body, and to see how his physical body, you know, can hold the communication. I think our physical bodies just go into a fear and trauma response. I think it's just a kind of like, you know, if you walk out in the woods and you see a wild animal, they're going to, you know, they're not going to hang around. They're going to take off. And so I think we're sort of like that. We have a certain response, a physiological response. We have to get past it. You do that by developing, you know, abilities of your mind.
We only have about 4 minutes left, and we want to talk about the book and a couple of things here, but I have to ask you, where are you going with this? I mean, what's your journey? Have you got a flight plan?
Well, you know what I think is going to happen? I think my book is a breakthrough, to tell you the truth. I think my book, by bringing together the Tibetan Buddhist and Sufi and Hindu traditions, I think that that there are going to be some esoteric teachings coming out given the response my book received. I think this gives the go-ahead for these teachings to come out with what they know about being, and for people to connect the dots, you know, is for people to realize we are not alone, and that other lineages, sacred lineages, have been communicating with being.
Now, on our website, we have a place for them to go to find the book if they want to buy it, and that's important. In addition to that, I think you have a website. It's sacredencounters.com, and we have a link to that as well.
Oh, good. You know, you can buy it on Amazon or through me or through the publisher, Ex Libris. So you can get it any number of ways, but, you know, maybe you can get it on board craft. Who knows?
Let's find out what you're doing next. Another book or what?
I don't know. I don't have one planned. I just really needed to put this out and get this out first and see where this goes. I am doing some academic publishing with maybe transpersonal or or there's an article my partner and I just published in the International Society for the Study of Subtle Energies and Energy Medicine Journal. So we just put something out on Unity Consciousness.
You know, you were cured of cancer, or at least it's not there anymore. So you're a firm believer in what? Mind over matter, or opening up the avenues to, in other words, talk about, I hear the term spiritual healing a lot. What's your feelings about that?
Well, I think that probably what the being told Betty Andreasen is, hits it on the head. It's all about love. You know, if you can bring, I don't care if it's Western medicine or Eastern medicine. If you can bring love into it, if you can relate to it on the heart level, then you have the greatest chance that it will impact your physical body.
You know, I've never, love is a very strong force, but for some reason, humankind, especially here in this country and many other countries, we are likely to embrace just the opposite. And it just seems to me that agape love seems to be the message in almost every religion, every spiritual belief. And for some reason, womankind, they fight that.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the evolution.
And a lot of that, I think, is probably fear of the unknown.
Yeah. I mean, we have to work our way through. We have to work our way through the fear and the denial and the greed and all of that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get on a soapbox, but when people are familiar with other cultures, other people, other things, all of a sudden they get along and all this hatred goes away most of the time. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I think we do have an innate capacity for love, and that it can be strengthened, and we're going to be tested. I think we're going to be really challenged in the days ahead. But ultimately, you know, moving towards interspecies communication and love is what this is all about.
Is there something in this interview that you didn't get a chance to bring out for our listeners that you think is very important, or did we cover most of it?
I think we've pretty much done it.
Now, a lot of people will wonder, was that guy fishing for a compliment, or was he really sincere? The human man brain is very suspicious, and I guess that's what happens when you have these encounters. Sometimes they come back with evil stories when maybe there wasn't anything evil there at all.
You know what? There is a line I think I would like to leave people with. You know, this is basically what the beings told Joy, that they wanted her to communicate, and so I'm doing it one step further removed from her, but they basically want people to know. They said, tell people we are here, we are real, and we are not here to harm them. So if we can get beyond the fear, you know, on a personal level and then on a collective level, we're
Dr. Janet Culley, it's been a pleasure. One final question before we go. Washington State has lots of UFO sightings, so you seem to be in an area where things happen. You've done research around the country, internationally even. Do you agree that the Pacific Northwest has a lot of instances of this sort of thing happening?
Yeah, and I think there's a reason for it. I mentioned in the book there's a Tibetan Buddhist prophecy that in the Northwest would be born a new consciousness on the planet. And so, you know, I like to quote Jim Morrison, the West is the best. I truly think there's something energetically here that is happening that's unique. And so I'm just glad to be here and able to facilitate it in my own, you know, whatever way I can.
Are you in the phone book?
Oh yeah.
Your practices?
Yeah.
So someone that.
Oh sure, you can access me on the internet too. Just put my name. Just Google my name.
Okay, and we'll talk to you later.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you very much, Doctor. Bye bye.